This is Solve It for Kids.
Hello, my amazing and curious friends. My name is Jennifer, the Dean of all things STEM and STEAM, and this is Solve It for Kids, the podcast that gives kids and families a peek inside the real world of scientists, engineers, and experts as they solve problems in their jobs using creativity, cooperation, and critical thinking. And now please welcome to the show my podcast partner, Galactic Space Geek, Jeff Gagne.
Galactic Space Geek Jeff Gagne is super geeked up today because we are talking to a guest I have been wanting to talk to for a while now. And you are all going to go, wait a minute, don't I know that name?
And the answer will be, yes, you do. But what problem are we solving today?
What is it like to be a civilian astronaut?
Auto sequence start in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What is it like to be a civilian astronaut? Well, this is going to be a first for our podcast, and I am very excited to meet our guest. Who is it, Jeff?
Our guest today is the terrific Chris Sembroski. Why do you know his name? Because he is an inspiration for astronaut, and he's an avionics engineer.
Welcome to the show, Chris.
Well, hi. Hi, Jen, Jeff. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, we
are we.
Yes, we are so thrilled to have you. So I like to start out with, you've done so many cool things in your life and of late, right? But when you were a kid, did you always want to go to space?
Yeah, as a kid, being an astronaut was being a superhero, and no one really thinks you can be a superhero, right?
Right.
I don't have superpowers. My brother had all the athletic ability. I was good at math, but there was no way that I was going to be a superhero like that. But what I could do is I could build model rockets, and I could get out telescopes, and I could look at the stars. And that is what drew me in, and I could get close to what it was like to be next to an astronaut. So I got really excited about rockets and seeing things in space.
Oh, that's
so cool.
I like
that. Yeah. I have been waiting. Jen always asks that same first question.
Yep.
And I have been waiting to ask my follow-up because I was doing some reading on you before this episode. And one thing I didn't know from when we met at the Artemis 1 launch is that when you were in high school, you were looking at the stars from the roof of your high school?
Yeah, even more creepy is that my particular high school was a retrofitted hospital where people went to get, get healed and get
what?
And were
wow.
sick, and people were born there. People died there. It was great. But on the roof of this high school, it was a four-story building, had a nice flat roof. And yeah, like a commercial building style high school. And so we would climb up the back staircase, take these giant telescopes that as big as I could carry up the stairs and set them up in the middle of the night and take a look at the stars with the help of some really inspiring professors.
Wow.
Okay. I wanted to ask, you were starting to make it sound like you guys did this without permission. Was this like an astronomy club kind of thing?
I had some amazing physics professors in high school because I went to a school that was dedicated for science and math in Durham, North Carolina. And so I actually had a class called astrophysics. And then we invited everybody that was curious and wanted to get out of bed late at night to come look at the stars and come join us and come take a look. And it was so neat to see what's lurking in the darkness of the skies that we don't always see that stuff, right? Because we get all these city lights around us. The next thing you know, you're seeing nebula and you're seeing these galaxies that are just out of view, but you can see them with a little bit of magnification.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's so exciting. And wow, astrophysics, I would have killed to have that class in high school.
I tell you
that
what, I learned a lot. And a lot of that has stuck with me for a long time. Yeah.
Very cool.
How does that compare? I know I'm jumping ahead a little here, but how does that compare? Like when you finally got into space versus watching it from the roof, did you remember think back to when you were a kid on the roof?
Well, yeah, but the view is completely different. Looking up at the stars, you're looking out. And the only thing I kept wanting to do once I got to space was look back at Earth.
Oh!
And that was so mind-blowing to see it from that point of view.
I never thought about that. Yeah, that's true. That's probably at the moment the most beautiful thing in the world, like while you're looking back down from space, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so we just touched into it. So let's get to our question,
right,
which is, what is it like to be a civilian astronaut? And I know there's a few different words that are being used now, commercial astronaut, private astronaut, civilian astronaut. But right. Inspiration 4 was the first all-civilian astronaut mission. What's that right. like, Chris?
That is an incredible way to go to space because, one, you can go from your day job to being an astronaut and then go back to your day job.
Oh, my goodness. Hey, boss, right? I'll be right back in a little while.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. And so no big deal. Just punch out. I'll be back. Got to go take a few pictures of the Earth while I'm orbiting for a while. But it is an incredible thing because you know still that there are government astronauts that have dedicated their lives and have been studying and preparing for years to do these high-risk missions. And we trained for 6 months before our flight, but it wasn't about competing with other astronauts or other people. It was about figuring out how we can accommodate and be more inclusive to make it possible for more people to have opportunities to go to space, not just for our particular mission, but for the next commercial mission that goes. And that is an incredible thing to think about when you realize, oh, these test pilots from the Mercury program back in the 60s and all these folks that had to be the best of the best
right.
in the top of their class. And now we're talking about, we want to take people that are passionate, that are artists, that are going to be great teammates and give them the opportunity to go to space. And it's
definitely a shift.
Yeah, huge shift.
Well, and also I think it's a really amazing one, as you said. So can you tell us a little bit, like you had to train 6 months for this, and then how many days were you in space? Because that seems like, wow, that's a long time.
Right. Well, you would think it's a long time, but astronauts these days train for years.
Yes.
And well, I guess I was told I was going to space on a Zoom call, and then 6 months later we launched. So
oh, wow. We had to nice wow. Zoom call.
It was pretty cool. And so we had to pack in all that training and we had to form a team. We had to meet each other. We had to figure out what the mission actually was all within 6 months.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like we were training constantly that entire time, but we knew that along the way it would ramp up and we would start doing more things back to back. And so we started off doing things like team building where we climbed a volcano and slept in the snowy and ice tents up on top of Mount Rainier.
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
And so things like that really brought us together as a team. Then went to SpaceX in Hawthorne, California, and learned all about Dragon and did lots of simulations and learned all the different systems. And that took a lot of time and study and focus. But the next thing you know, like you said, 6 months from finding out that you're going to go to space out of the thin air to actually launching on the Falcon 9 for 3 days was is a short amount of time. 6 months seems like a long time, but once you start doing all these things like flying in a fighter jet or going in a centrifuge or all those different things
gosh.
And learning how to put on a spacesuit, it went by really quick.
Can I ask you, were you nervous when you launched on the rocket? I was just curious.
Right. I wasn't.
Really?
I had my family and friends all, you know, watching that were plenty nervous for me. And so I was just elated and excited and thinking this is finally happening. This is an amazing thing.
It's like, oh, were you having like the pinch me moment? Like, am I really going to space?
Yes. Yeah. Except you can't pinch yourself through a spacesuit like
that's
true. But right?
Very true. Very true.
So in all of that training, I definitely want to get to talking to the mission, but in all of that training, was there anything that surprised you that you really enjoyed about the training?
I thought centrifuge training was really, really fun. And
fun. Okay.
And I didn't think it would be.
That's not the word I would use to describe it, but go ahead.
Right? I mean, you're experiencing G-forces that you probably have never experienced before in strange ways, right?
New. Right?
And I'll tell you, it's fun because you get into the mindset of thinking, okay, I'm pretending like I'm actually on the rocket. And I know I'm not going anywhere, so it's safe. And so they run you through that scenario of what a rocket launch feels like, and they change the G-forces while you're in there. And they run you through an abort sequence, so you know what it would feel like if you had to cancel your flight midway through launching.
Ooh,
And
those are some serious G's, aren't they?
Well, we did up to 6 G's.
Holy cow! They're through the
chest, right? And that's like having several of your largest friends stand on your chest.
Oh my God!
It makes it a little bit harder to breathe, you don't pass out. You don't pass out.
Well, okay, that's good.
Yeah,
that's a positive thing.
Right. But it was really fun because I kept visualizing and imagining that I was leaving the atmosphere, that I was going to space to explore. And that was an amazing feeling to match what my story, my mind was creating.
That's incredible. And I think that that's something that's really cool for, you know, our listeners to hear, too, because sometimes, I mean, your body's going through all these crazy things and you're just like, hey, this is cool, right? Like, this is really amazing, instead of, oh my gosh, what is happening to me, right? Which is probably what I would be behaving like in there.
Right. Now, I will say, listen to the instructions, take the anti-nausea medicine.
There you go.
Turn your head sideways and look out sideways while you're spinning. Not even for a moment, because
then
I'll be the first to admit I did not listen, apparently, and suffer the consequences. But I still had a lot of fun, even though it was fun.
Nice. That is nice. The first time I've heard anyone describe that centrifuge experience with, once you climbed in, shifting your mindset to, okay, I'm going through my mission. I need to rehearse it this way.
Absolutely.
That was a neat way for you to describe that to us. In terms of when you're training, train as if you're doing the job. It's not just the, here come the G's. It's, all right, no, this is the launch. We need to get through this and I need to stay focused.
Absolutely got it right. Yep. Through every scenario that we were doing, we trained as if we were in the moment and it was real, and practicing how we would perform for real life. And that was important, so that you build those skills, you build that practice, so that when things do happen and you can be prepared and ready, and you have built up instincts to react in a way that is safe and that helps your team.
Yeah, that's great.
Nice.
So can you talk to us about the mission of Inspiration 4 and kind of what that was all about? Because that was pretty special too, I think.
Right. So when we go to space, we can do great things for Earth at the same time, right?
Yes.
So we're going to explore space. We're going to do microgravity research. And through that mission, we were able to raise nearly of a $250 million with a B.
Wow.
For St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. And the reason that St. Jude was chosen as the partner for this is because it is an incredible opportunity to help kids survive childhood diseases all over the world.
Yes.
And St. Jude's mission to make sure that no child dies in the dawn of life is an incredibly important one, especially as we're trying to go out and explore and look towards Mars, look towards other places, and start expanding our presence out of Earth's atmosphere. So that's what the mission that we were supporting through Inspiration 4 was. And then the mission on board Inspiration 4 was, making sure that we weren't going to be the last people that do something like this. We did medical research that helped check our blood. We checked the microbiomes around the capsule and on our skin to see, you know, those little microbiomes and different organisms that live on our skin, that lives in everybody. What do they look like?
Right.
How much do they move from one person to another?
Okay.
It's got the strangest. Apparently, I had the most unidentified microbiomes.
Really?
That's interesting.
I've got a Most Martian Award from the researchers to prove it. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. And so we were doing things like that. And then on top of that, the other part of the mission is that we were bringing a unique and diverse crew that got to be ourselves.
Right.
We got to be ourselves in space. You know, Haley got to be the ambassador for St. Jude. Jared got to take this crew up and make sure we were safe. And Cyan, Dr. Proctor, did her watercolors. I took lots of photos and somewhat playing is an exaggeration of the term, but I tried to play the ukulele and sing a little bit. And nice. You asked me what's the scariest thing in space, and the scariest thing is to sing in front of your friends. So there you go.
I like it.
Yes.
So I love both of the missions, both inside the capsule and what you were doing, and the mission of the Inspiration 4 itself and all of the inspiration that it brought back. As one of those people, actually as two of those people that would like to do what you did, is pause our day jobs, go up into space, we thank you for doing that mission inside the capsule, moving forward so that more of us will get to do that. My question is, can you talk to us a little bit about something I don't think gets talked about enough the more time goes away from when you launched to now? It's been just a little over 2 years. And each of your seats had a title and a concept that went with the four seats. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So starting with Jared Isaacman's seat, we called him Rook. His seat represented a pillar called leadership. And that's almost obvious since he's the one who funds the flight. He is a leader of Shift 4 Payments, which is a payment processing company that he's done really well with. He is the one that decided that this was going to benefit St. Jude. And so that's what his seat of leadership represented. And he was our commander on the flight. And we looked up to him to make sure that we stayed safe. Our families looked to him to make sure that we stayed safe as well.
Yes, yes.
And piloting the spacecraft was Dr. Cyan Proctor. And she was selected as the pilot through a Twitter contest to build a website on the Shift 4 website. And the name of her seat was Prosperity. So showing her entrepreneurial spirit as an artist and a poet, she won her seat through that contest. Haley Arsenault was selected as the crew member who represented the seat of hope, because she was a childhood cancer survivor. And she was now a physician assistant at the same hospital that saved her life.
Wow. And
she
That's
really
awesome.
Does represent hope, right?
And exactly.
For sure.
Right. I mean, as a kid, if you think you get cancer at age 10 or 11, are you going to be able to be an astronaut? No one ever used to think that's possible. And here she is. She went to space. She spent all seven continents.
That's just fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah. And then my seat was generosity. And it was a Super Bowl commercial where you were encouraged to donate to St. Jude with a chance of getting your name selected out of a hat to win a trip to space. And through an act of my generosity to donate, I absolutely lost that sweepstakes. But it turned out the best man at my wedding also gave a donation, didn't tell me, and he lives on the opposite corner of the continental United States from me now. And out of an act of generosity and his part, gave my name to Jared. And so he gave me his seat to go to space since he was not able to.
Wow. That's amazing. See, then that just shows that it was meant to be, right? Like you were supposed to. You're supposed to take all of your dreams that you had standing on that high school all those years ago and go into space. And now not only do you have, you know, your day job is back, but now you get to tell everybody else that it's possible for them to go to space. How cool is that?
It's a really cool feeling. And even more than that, I don't know if you're going to ask me a question about this part or not, but coming back from space, I have a much more heightened sense of wanting to make that possible for other people. And that's what I'm doing at Blue Origin every day, is working as an avionics engineer to help the new Glenn rocket get to flight and to be
fantastic.
And if you don't know what the new Glenn rocket is, it is a incredibly large reusable vehicle that's the size of the Saturn V. It's amazing to see it being put together. And I'm so excited for our launch. It's going to be coming up sooner than later.
That's amazing.
You certainly know how to do interviews. Jen just mentioned the day job. My very next question was going to be about, you got to tell us about what is an avionics engineer.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. So an avionics engineer. Okay. So I've met a lot of different people that work at NASA in all types of different fields.
Sure.
And it's the same thing when you work in the space industry. You need lots of different people in lots of different fields. We need people like you guys, Jen and Jeff, to tell the story and inspire kids and to educate. We need artists like Cyan to like inspire the imagination. Right. And we need engineers to draw up plans. We need maintenance and metal workers and electricians to build the vehicle. And then what I'm working on is testing the avionics. And avionics are the computers and the different components that tell the rocket what it's supposed to do, when it's supposed to do it.
The very important things. Yes, exactly. Right,
yeah. So like the brains, the nerves, the sensors, the cameras, all those different things that we've come to expect from our iPhones. You know, how do you get your cell phone to do all it needs to do and tell it to command a rocket what it needs to do? So it's a complex combination of electronics and computer equipment that we're working together to make this rocket fly. And so I'm working on testing all those things together to make sure they're going to do what we want to do.
That's awesome. So what we love to do is we love to talk about things on the show too. That can you tell us about any of the failures and what engineers learn from failures? Because sometimes when I'm talking to kids, they're like, oh, well, that rocket blew up or that didn't work. So, you know, and I'm trying to explain to them, no, you guys learn from any kind of failures or anything. So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So let's take you back to another job I had, which was being a space camp counselor.
Okay.
So this job was really cool. And I got to meet a lot of neat people and take kids through tours of Kennedy Space Center, put them on simulations of space shuttle missions.
Oh, fun.
But I also got involved with the high power model rocketry group. And so what's cool about doing high power model rockets, it's just a larger version of those Estes model rockets you have, but it's louder and the vehicles are a little bit heavier, a little bit more exciting. And so I had this really crazy idea of getting a road cone, one of those large orange road cones, and turning it into a rocket.
Okay. Oh my gosh.
Right. And so I configured all the insides. It looked like a regular road cone and got the motor mounted inside. And then I've got this figured out, and then I go to launch it, and next thing I know, it's doing somersaults, and it's people are running across the field, and it lands in a palm tree.
Oh, no!
And so it was a spectacular failure, but what I learned from it was that the two most important measurements you have to do when you make a rocket is you have to make sure the center of gravity is pointing at the top, and then your center of pressure where the fins are needs to be behind that. And for some reason, I had reversed those.
Oh.
And so the rocket had no choice but to spin. And so I had to rig up some fins that actually I came up with a neat idea of using duct tape as long streamers like a kite to act as really cool duct tape streamers on the back to move my center of pressure back. And next time I launched that rocket, the orange road cone launched straight up in the air a couple hundred feet. It was fantastic.
Perfect. See,
excellent.
That's what I mean. So even spectacular failures, which I hope you got that on video because that would be so cool.
Yeah, there's no evidence in the late 90s of this type of thing. So
okay, there you go. There would be today. But that's a really good point, is that you learn from all of the things that you do. So even a failure or something that doesn't quite go what you think. That's a good thing to know.
Right. We see rocket companies doing that now, like SpaceX's Starship. When they launched that vehicle, they intentionally launched it hoping it was going to leave the launch pad, and it did. And so people see the explosion a couple minutes later, but that was more than they could have hoped for where they were trying to get
exactly.
to. At that time.
Exactly. Right.
That's terrific. What a connection with the nose cone rocket story. And I love how you mentioned no evidence. And it brings up the quote from the old movie of "It lives now only in Chris's memory." And that actually sparked a question.
Yes.
As we are closing in on the end of our time, it's been a little more than 2 years since your historic flight. Mm-hmm. I know you've been asked a gazillion questions about that. Yes. But I get to ask right now, from 2 years since, if you think about your flight, if you were to sit there right now, close your eyes, what do you see?
I see those first moments being in microgravity after the engines have cut off. I see the darkness of space as I'm still strapped in, a few moments later, there's this incredible bright ray of sunlight that shines in through the side windows that we only got to see once. And this brilliant, beautiful, clear light comes in and just illuminates the entire capsule in this amazing bright glow. And that is an amazing piece of imagery I think I'll take with me forever. And I've said it in different ways, but I say it in this way, is that if your eyes could take a breath of fresh air, that's what that moment felt like to me.
That is very,
thank you, Chris.
Yeah, that impactful was... and incredible. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
Now, on that note, we are at the point in the show where we ask our guests to give our listeners a challenge. I'm curious what your challenge will be to our listeners, Chris.
Ooh, this is a good one. So on my flight on Inspiration 4, I had the incredible opportunity to take a lot of different things up with me in the capsule, including a ukulele, a little Lego figure or two, and even some magnet tiles. But some of the more meaningful things were some notes or some postcards or some pictures that people asked me to send with me. And so with Blue Origin and Club for the Future, which is their nonprofit organization, they are giving every single person that wants an opportunity to do so to send your own art to space. And so if you go to clubforfuture.org, and click on the link that says fly a postcard to space, you can see all the instructions on how to send a postcard to space. And I encourage every single one of you that's listening to go and get one of those postcard templates, design your own art of your vision of the future, and send it back to Blue Origin to the Club for Future, for the Club for the Future. And we will launch that on a new Shepard rocket. It will go to space, it will come back, and we will send it back to you with a stamp saying it has flown above the Kármán line, it has been to space.
Whoa.
Wow.
And you will forever have your own art that has flown in space.
Oh my
gosh. That is super.
I'm going to have to do that, and I'm not even like a great artist. I can just sketch a little stick figure or something. That's incredible that Blue Origin is offering to do that. That's really, really cool. Yeah,
it's amazing. We've flown more pieces of art than any other government or space company so far. And we've got a goal of sending 1 million postcards to space. So we're on the way, but we need your help to get there.
Well, and think of how that brings space to the every person, right? To the regular person. That's just incredible.
It is. Now, and you start to think it again, start thinking about it too. And you realize that space is touching us every single day in a way that we may not realize, right? We don't even go to the grocery store without putting in the coordinates on our GPS. And that's we're sort of using space assets.
True. So.
Right.
Exactly. And
I love the challenge. And just like Inspiration 4, spread that inspiration from story to story, people telling other people, sharing videos. I am already picturing kids in a neighborhood sending up artwork on a postcard and then getting it back.
Yes.
And then showing it around the neighborhood of, I just got this back from Blue Origin.
Yeah.
And then other kids in the neighborhood are going to do the same. And then it's going to keep spreading like wildfire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it. I hope to make that happen. I hope to see you guys participate and have that happen. I'd love to see you go around sharing your postcard stamped, I've been to space, and get it. 5 more kids excited to do the same thing. That would be incredible.
Jen and I are doing it.
Absolutely. We are
for
in.
For sure.
We are totally doing
this. For sure.
This.
You got two of us, Chris.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
All right.
Oh my gosh. This has been such an amazing and inspiring episode. Thank you so much for being on Solve for Kids,
Thank
Chris.
Thank you so much,
you guys,
Chris.
You're so welcome. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
What a fantastic episode. My goodness. I get why Chris does so many interviews. He is fabulous at talking about the mission of Inspiration 4, the experience that he had, and sharing it out with other people. Talk about an incredibly well-named mission. All 4 of those astronauts, to include Chris, have spread so much inspiration and so much more joy and passion space exploration and sharing space with a broader range of humanity, which is what the space industry is talking about right now. What an excellent episode. This is one I'm going back to listen to.
Absolutely. Chris was fantastic. And, you know, it was so wonderful hearing the different point of view. We've had astronauts on the show that have been NASA trained who are amazing. But it's interesting to get a peek inside kind of what's happening on the commercial front and to find out what it's like to be a civilian astronaut. And, you know, I loved his challenge, too, about sending a postcard to space. I want to do that. I don't know. What do you think, Jeff? Are you going to do that?
I have actually already done this.
Oh, well, there you go.
I was at an event one time where I actually met some of the folks that work for Blue Origins Club for the Future. And they do some really neat outreach and programs. And it includes filling out your own postcard. They take it and then it goes up into space, and it's just a really neat thing to know that something that you've created breaks that Kármán line and gets up into space, something that most of us have been looking at or dreaming about our entire lives. This is totally worth looking into. We want to know if you do this.
Yes, absolutely. If you do this, share it with us on our social media. We are at KidsSolve at Facebook, X, and Instagram. And don't forget to check out our website, solveitforkids.com, where we'll have more information about Chris, about inspiration for how you can send your postcard with clubforthefuture.org. And then, as always, we have some book recommendations for kids about how to learn more about space and be curious.
Absolutely. This might be the longest list of books that we put out there, but they're totally worth it. Keep looking up, stay inspired, look up the inspiration for mission and learn more about it. Until next time, you'll hear Jen and Jeff on
Solve It for Kids.